All right, guys, welcome back to episode 18 of Primal Alchemy's Red Pill Initiation Hour, here with your host, Chris Story. As per usual, guys, a few things to touch base on before we get the episode up and rolling. The first is a massive thank you for the continuous support that you guys are showing me through Instagram, through iTunes, through YouTube, through every platform that I release this podcast onto. And it really does enable me to be able to push this out to the masses, get the message out there and help people help themselves, save yourself, save the world. That's what it's all about. If you can leave me a review on Instagram, YouTube, iTunes, whatever, just drop me a screenshot of the review you've left and I'll give you a 15% discount code to be used on primalalchemy.co.uk. But if that's a little bit too hard for you guys, then just for listening, I'll give you the discount code REDPILL. That's the discount code REDPILL that will give you a 10% discount of any sale within primalalchemy.co.uk. So this is the perfect opportunity to jump on board and test out the new ancestral potential coaching plans that I've just launched on the Primal Alchemy website. We've got the Demigod Fitness Program, the Quantum Fuel Nutrition Program, the Enlightened Biohacking One-to-One Tutoring Program, and the Self-Mastery Ascension Mentorship Program. Something there for everybody's taste, everybody's goals. So yeah, check it out, guys. I really did make this with my heart to give you what I believe to be the best programs when it comes to fitness, nutrition, and just overall optimization of our being, physical, mental, spiritual optimization, all wrapped up in one banner, one easy package for you guys to just have everything given to you on a plate. I'll guide it through you one-to-one personal coaching from myself. You get direct contact with me. You get an app-based login for your phones, which gives you all of the workouts, plans, everything you would need right there on the app, branded by Primal Alchemy itself. Contact with myself. You get live metrics to see your progression throughout the weeks. Some pretty high-tech shit, guys. So give it a go. If you're looking to take yourself to the next level, check it out. Ancestral Potential Coaching Programs, primalalchemy.co.uk. And remember, red pill. Other than that, guys, moving on, we've got today's episode with Mr. Dominic Rapson, aka Origins of Vitality. Now, Dom is a calisthenics health coach, ancestral health coach. So many tags that you can attribute to Dom because he really is a full spectrum type of guy, very much like myself. He has walked the walk as well as talking the talk, and very interesting fella. A lot of good information dished out on today's episode. Maybe a little bit triggering to some of you, and you'll see the reason why when you get into the episode. But the truth is the truth, and sometimes the truth fucking hurts. But at the end of the day, it's the truth, and that's what we're here to give. I don't align myself to any ideology, any preconceived ideas that distorts the information that I deliver to you guys. I'm giving you everything that really will take you to the next level and not malnourish you like a lot of these big names promote and push on social media channels. So yeah, me and Dom talk about the carnivore diet, which is a diet, it's a heavy meat-based diet that's really found its feet in 2018, and Dom has been practicing it for quite some time now. We look at Dom's personal journey through his own health, fitness, performance, and just overall life. And he's got some stories to tell. We break down what we believe to be the vegan agenda, which is the paradigm that's being forced upon us to kind of put us into this plant-based vegan propaganda force-fed down our throats that you have to be vegan to be spiritual, you have to be plant-based to be healthy, meat causes cancer, milk is pus and not natural to the human diet, all that bullshit. Bullshit that's being fed to you by people that have no fucking idea what they're talking about. But yeah, you know what? That's 5 minutes. Fuck. Last episode, I had this cut down to like 3 minutes on the intro. So still working on it, guys. Hopefully you stay tuned so far. Let's get this episode up and running. Really do love this episode, and me and Dom would really appreciate any of your feedback. So yeah, let's get after it. Episode 18, let's roll.
You take the blue pill. The story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill. You stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
As above, so below, what lies without resides within. Time for growth to begin. Mental, physical, and spiritual. We find balance with all three as we focus on totality. The whole, not the half. This is for those on a spiritual path. Looking for the clues to the answers of life. But the truth ain't always nice, so leave your ego at the door. Let your inner lion roar and your spirit soar as we go deep down to the molecular level. Tap into the body with some yogic breath. Throw in some calisthenics for a true strength test. Like the shamans of old, we use the nature to heal. With a little bit of DMT to reveal. This whole life journey is a little surreal. And your mind needs a leader, not a follower in life. Let your mind be the master and you pay a hefty price. This next 60 minutes is about self-mastery. It's not an easy path and it's a lifelong journey. But we up to empower with this red pill initiation hour. With this red pill initiation hour, brought to you by Primal Alchemy.
The Matrix is the world that has been pulled over your eyes to blind you from the truth.
3, 2, 1, and oh shit, we're live. All right, guys, welcome back to episode 18 of Primal Alchemy's Red Pill Initiation Hour. So, guys, this is a monumental episode. I've been waiting for this one for a while. We've been trying to make it work, and it just seemed that destiny had other plans. There was always little fuck ups here and there, and it stopped us from really be able just to start the show. So, finally, the stars have aligned, and I've finally got my main man on, who I've been a fond follower of for a while. He's one of the rare breeds of humans, it seems to be, living today that actually knows his shit and knows his shit and isn't afraid to fucking tell people. So, I just want to give a massive warm welcome to Mr. Dominic Rapson, a.k.a. Origins of Vitality. So, Dom, thanks for coming on, dude. And yeah, just it's great to finally have you in a position where we can pick each other's brains and spread some light, spread some truth, and see how many people we can trigger in the process.
Sounds great. It's a pleasure to be on here. As you said, it's been a while trying to get this organized and just been watching the growth of Primal Alchemy. So let's get into it. Really excited for this.
Yeah, thanks, man. It's obviously you were meant to come on literally on like episode 3 or 4, I think I had you booked in as, and we just couldn't get it to work. I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was the powers that be behind the scenes just pulling some strings, and they're like, no, we can't let these two connect, otherwise our game is over. We're fucked. but as always, the shift is upon us, so it's time to spread the light, man. And yeah, I thought it'd be good, Dom, just for you to give a little bit of a rundown for people who aren't familiar with yourself, your work, what you're about, and just let everyone know, yeah, like who you are and how you've become Origins of Vitality.
All right, fair. I'll try. It's quite a lot within becoming Origins of Vitality, but I'll keep it as direct as possible.
Oh, mate, go as deep as you want. It's the story's all part of it, man. We love it.
Oh, fair enough, then. So basically, I've only been into nutrition and optimization of human health and human performance for about coming up to 7 years now.
Not long.
And not too long, no. But there's so much more to do and so much more to learn. So it always feels like a year goes by and you've only learned so much. But just trying to apply all the things I learned and trying to find the truth, just like you. We're truth seekers, trying to find what has been kept from us and what we deserve as humans. And it all started with bodybuilding for me. I had to start developing my strength and my body as a scuba diver at the time living in the Caribbean. And it was wrecking my body, lifting all those heavy tanks up and down. So that started me at the gym lifting weights. From then, I started doing men's physique. So I started bodybuilding properly and started competing. And that sparked my interest in nutrition, because I noticed that although I was growing muscle and getting stronger, other parts of my body weren't healthy. And I started to dislike the whole realm of the fitness industry and the nutrition they apply, which I'm sure you agree with me, Chris, is all to do with corporate greed and making money, all these supplements and different things that aren't natural to the human body.
Yep.
So, you know, unlike yours, that actually has real nutrition and actual real ingredients that come from the planet, I was taking all these crappy supplements, synthetic supplements, and it was making me sick. From that point, I then started to study into nutrition and became qualified as just as like your standard nutritionist. And a whole other journey started from there. I started to get what some may say was my spiritual growth, my journey into learning the material world and the spiritual realms. And along with that, because of the people I was around and being in the Caribbean, which is heavily Rastafarian influence, I jumped straight into veganism.
Smart choice.
You never go full vegan, so they say nowadays, and so I agree. But I went full vegan, and I spent 2 years in that journey, doing a lot of yoga, doing a lot of meditation, just really trying to work on my spiritual essence. But mostly caught up in Asian dogma, religious dogma, philosophical dogma as well, which I don't agree with anymore. But during that time, it served its purpose. But because of the vegan part of it, it destroyed my body. I became pretty sick. I looked terrible. My performance went down. Everything just went down, just to say in short. And I was studying biodynamics and Ayurvedic principles with some of the Rastafarians in the Springs of Barbados. And now, come to think of it, I noticed how weak and frail they were, full of infection and always getting sick, which makes sense now that we understand what we do now. But yeah, so after that, I went back to hunting, because I forgot to mention, I stopped all hunting for veganism, stopped eating the foods I normally eat. Which was still, to be honest, it was the vegan diet was still better than the bodybuilding diet in terms of nutrients and the things you got to eat, but not that much better. Started off good, as most people do. I'm sure you're aware of that as well. And then it's just slowly starts to decline. Some outliers normally last 5 to 10 years before getting sick, but to me, it happened within 2 years. And after that, I decided to become pescatarian. I started spearfishing again. I started hunting, studying and eating a lot more white meat. And strength, physical performance, skin look, everything, my brain power, my emotional capabilities and control, my rational ability, my logical thinking, everything started to go back up. So from that point, I was like, okay, well, there's definitely something wrong with not having animal products. So I started my studies into tribal work from that point, where I traveled to different parts of the United Kingdom, such as Scotland and some of the Isles of Wales. I also went to the Bedouin tribe in the deserts of Egypt, in near the border of Jordan, where I studied dry fasting and gut bacteria health, breaking with probiotics of the natural world with like goat and camel milk. Then from that point, I then started getting into metabolic typing and blood typing. I studied under Paul Check for holistic life coaching. So I learned all my holistic protocols. And that was where the turning point was, where I was like, oh, wow. So it's much more to do with the whole body than just what you put into a small part of the body. So from then on, it was a whole journey after studying the tribes and seeing how they ate, which was pretty much meat-based with very few plant materials. Any plant materials were used as more like hormesis, just a little bit of medicinal for different symptoms. But the bulk of the food I was learning to eat and prepare was meat-based. from that point onwards, I decided to experiment with nutritional ketosis, where I had the confidence and the pleasure of knowing people that trusted in my science and the work I was studying. So I worked with four different cancer patients, and I tested out nutritional ketosis on them, which worked marvelously. Blown away at how efficiently it worked. That obviously gave me a tremendous amount of power and confidence to continue the work I was doing. So from there, I decided to test performance in ketosis, where myself and a few other clients, we ran 30 hours fasted, a full marathon on one small 500 milliliter bowl of water in 30 degree heat with no problems, no lack in energy, extremely quick recovery. So just kept testing and trying to prove different sciences I was studying.
Connected. All right, man, we had a little bit of a cutoff then, Dom. So if you want to carry on with what you're saying, and I'll just edit that bit out.
All right, cool. Do you know where you cut off from?
You were just describing your 30-hour fast with the marathon.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, so from a 30-hour fast, 30-degree heat, running a full marathon with plenty of energy, no dip, no hunger, I started to get really deep into that system of ancestral patterns. So how our ancestors would have hunted on an empty stomach, fasted in the heat, chasing down animals, all made sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
So from then on, as you know now, I'm now fully carnivorous. I don't eat any plant materials or, yeah, of any kind. I only eat something that had eyes. And yeah, so it's been just over a year now working with the carnivore part of eating with the ancestral protocols, holistic protocols. And yeah, the results have just been ridiculous in myself and the clients I'm working with at the moment. What are your thoughts on it? You've been seeing a lot of that recently from my side of things on social media.
Yeah, I've been watching your journey as well, Dom, and it's interesting to see, because I haven't I've done this very similar path, in that I talk from experience and not from an Instagram meme. I've done the thing like back in the day, like where you're obsessed with bodybuilding, you do the bodybuilding diet, and then you begin to like, if you're more of a deeper person and you're, like you said, truth seekers, me and you are truth seekers, and you seek truth, you quickly sieve through the bullshit. So I went past the bodybuilding diet. Then, yeah, I experimented being like vegetarian and vegan. I did the whole vegan thing, obviously without the moral compass to kind of keep me sort of tied into that dogma. Right. But I tried it and... yeah, same sort of results. The first thing you see, you do get an initial good result, and that's normally just from the fact that you've cut out refined carbohydrates. You're in a calorie deficit most of the time. A lot of the benefits that the vegan crowd like to promote is normally attributed to just simple physiological responses that you could get from almost any diet if you just know how to eat clean.
Yeah.
So yeah, I did that. And then kind of started to work my way around different sort of philosophies on nutrition, and trying to find something that connected the physical, the mental, and the spiritual all together. And I really kind of settled on like the work of like Weston A. Price.
Yeah, and one of my main influences.
Yeah, that's kind of like mine as well. I guess I'm not full blown carnivore like you say that you've done. I haven't actually tried that yet, which is why I like following you, man, because I like seeing what you're up to. I like seeing the results, and you can see I've seen changes within you in the past year from following you. And it's I am intrigued by the carnivore diet, and I think we are in winter now, so yeah, I mean, historically speaking, if we would have been like pretty much full-blown carnivores or extreme carnivores in the winter, definitely in the winter. In the summer, we might have had a little bit of carb intake just from from the growth of like berries and a few little bit of veg here and there, but it would have been very limited. But yeah, definitely strict carnivore in the diet. So I might start it up, man. I might give it a go, and I'm intrigued to delve a little bit deeper into the carnivore diet with you in a few minutes. What's been the main sort of turning point? Is the carnivore diet been the main thing that out of everything you've experienced that give you the biggest change, the biggest sort of metamorphosis of character? And that's on like a, I know you said that you were like, you got into your spiritual shit back when you were doing your 2 years of being vegan. Do you still find yourself having that sort of spiritual connection on the carnivore diet?
That's a great question. It's like many people, you know, they'll say, oh, because of all the religious dogma and the philosophical dogma from Asia, they're like, oh, well, meat's going to dampen your soul. It's going to ruin your connectivity to the planet. But this is like what I've noticed from every tribe I've spent time with and every tribe I've had the pleasure of studying, even if I couldn't be there in person. They all are some of the most spiritual people on the planet that are so present and so in tune with the cycles of the planet and not damaging each other, living with an equilibrium that makes harmony. And I'll tell you straight up now, I mean, I do less spiritual work now, but since being on the carnivore diet, I have just so much clarity of mind. I wake up, I know exactly where I am to go and what I am to do. I have so much more emotional control and so much more logical processing. It's actually, I've noticed in clients as well, they all report within 4 weeks a huge shift in character and mental capacity for dealing with stress, for dealing with situations they would have normally been quite irrational or irritated by. So there's been a big shift, definitely a big shift there in terms of calmness and present thinking and quick thinking, very analytical thinking, critical thinking.
So what's like, obviously I'm playing devil's advocate, man. I'm totally on board with everything you say, you know that. But what's the pros and cons of, or I should say, what's the pros and cons from a perspective of someone who thinks that the carnivore diet is so extreme and it's unnatural just to be eating meat every day for like for extended periods of time, and that it's going to damage the environment, it's unfair on the animals because of the increase in livestock that's going to have to be held in order to fulfill everyone's demand, or in order to supply everyone's demand if everyone's on a carnivore diet. Like, these are the common sort of issues that people have with the carnivore diet. And how would you combat that?
My first verdict on that is that not everybody should be or have to be on this way of diet for optimum nutrition.
Yep.
I don't even like labeling it carnivore. I like labeling it ancestral, because people will say carnivore is only when you eat meat and that's all you eat. But I mean, that's never really been fully natural. If you look at our ancestral patterns, as you said, there would have been the berries. There would have been some wild vegetables, some wild starches. And I mean, if you're not an athlete who is training 2-3 times a day, you probably don't have to be consuming what I do, which is about 1 to 2 kilos of meat a day.
Shit. That's a lot, man.
It's a lot for most. I mean, my partner is also, Antoinette, she's also full carnivore. She's over a year in now as well. But because she trains 2-3 times a day as well, but she's so much smaller, she only eats about 800 grams a day.
Still quite a bit.
Yeah, still quite a bit for, especially she's like 5'1", but just lean, dense muscle.
Yeah.
But in terms of that sustainability and that approach, we see that the numbers in the cattle that is owned and farmed around the world has actually been in a constant decline. When years ago, there were much more, there was millions, and it has no effect really in terms of negative onto the atmosphere. This notion that people think that cows fart a gas that circulates into the air and heats up the planet causing pollution, it's just very misinformed, because we know that actually, first of all, cows don't fart methane, they burp it. And that little amount that burps, depending, of course, if it's a cow that's being left to live naturally, I don't agree with factory farming. That is an environmental issue because of the systems used and the water recycling and the manure sitting on concrete and then being thrown somewhere else. That's all just stupendous behavior by us human beings in our farming. But if we look at proper farming, the methane that a cow is excreting through its mouth by chewing and fermenting all of the starch is going into the grass. The grass is actually holding it. That's why, you know, if you go to a farmland with a lot of cows in at a certain time, you could light a whole field on fire because it actually sits on the grass rather than floating up into the atmosphere. Then, of course, we also have that grasslands and woodlands actually sequester carbon. So for every grassland that we have with roaming ruminants, and for those of you that don't know what a ruminant is, it's any four-legged mammal that has a four-compartment stomach and or a cecum that will ferment all of the grasses into saturated fat. So they're on high-fat diets as well, which is quite funny. So when people compare, oh, but a cow and a gorilla have so much muscle, well, it's building all that muscle through saturated fat and cholesterol. It just has a spiral gut or a cecum and four-compartment stomach to do it with, which we are not capable of. So we only have a 2% capacity to ferment any of those fibers in our colon, which is the smallest colon and the smallest large intestine out of all of the grazing herbivorous animals. So we think of that, and then we look at the purpose of these animals and how when you leave them to roam in land that has been desert, has become desert, they actually reverse the desert. They reverse desertification. So that's a prime fact and reason that we should be explaining to people that actually these animals roam around these grasses for a long time and actually keep the water and the carbon balance of the planet in these lands perfectly in tune. It's only when we come in and intervene that we mess that system up. But we've been hunting down these animals in the grasslands for many, many years.
Yeah, sure, brother. It's the circle of life. That's what Mufasa was saying. Mufasa was woke as fuck before that was even a term.
Yeah.
It's so true though, man. I mean, look at just dating back a few thousand years, tens of thousand years. So we're in the Holocene period now, which started at the end of the last ice age about 11,000 years ago, and that marks the time where, prior to that, we would have been living off, essentially, we would have been hunting megafauna. So megafauna are going to be those big, like big-ass land mammals, like the woolly mammoth and those big sloth-looking things and all the things that you see on the Ice Age film. We would have been hunting those. We would have been living off, like, real rich, nutrient-dense animal fats, fat-soluble vitamins, organ meats, raw, with the little veg, like you were saying, and then we sort of went through that transitional period from the Pleistocene into the Holocene.
Yeah.
And that was then led to the development of agricultural farming.
Yeah,
and
the Agrarian Evolution.
And then from that date, that is the date that if you look back into the Max Planck Institute of Evolutionary Anthropology over in Leipzig in Germany, the research they've done, they've shown that prior to that date, plant-based grains, maize, all of that sort of shit was never a part of the human diet. And it's since we started to integrate that into our diet that we started to find the introduction of autoimmune conditions, of neurodegenerative illnesses, of cancer, of all of this shit nowadays that we think just appears out of nowhere. And, oh, I'm an unlucky soul because I'm the one that, why me? Why did I get diagnosed?
Yeah, and I agree.
It's a lot. Not everything is to do with diet. Diet is important. There's a lot of other environmental triggers that will activate certain genes to really put us in a bad state of health. But it doesn't help that the food supply today is just not what it's meant to be. The soil is depleted as fuck. So if you're eating a vegan-based diet or a plant-based diet,
yeah, you're killing the planet.
Yeah, Quite literally, man. There's a massive genocide of insects going on. We're losing, and they're like the sex organs of the world, of nature, of the ecosystem, and they're dying out. The bees are dying out. Everything, and it's not going to help if you're just there, just like promoting monocropping systems where, oh, and we need to get the meat replacements. So let's get genetically modified soy, and then you've got like the likes of Codex Alimentarius, you've got Agenda 21, you've got these government programs being pushed through the World Health Organization.
That's terrible.
That's gearing us towards an apocalyptic. Apocalyptic situation, and it's like
it's so anti-nature.
Yeah, it is anti-nature, and it takes us out of the cycles. It is not natural to be consuming fruit and veg all year long. And what? So it's winter now here in the UK, and then you've got some. Let's say, without shitting on someone too much, I'm not going to use any examples. You've got a pretty face who's inherited a lot of genetic wealth from their parents and their ancestors, who's on Instagram promoting the vegan lifestyle, plant-based life.
Yeah.
And she or he.
I think you just shat on 80% of Instagram.
Oh shit, the haters are coming. And they're promoting, they're like, oh, got my fresh banana smoothie, and we're balls deep into winter, and it's like, do you understand what that is going to do to your body? Do you understand that you are sending a circadian mismatch message to your brain that it is summer here?
Exactly.
And it's not.
Yeah.
And it will fuck you up. You might be able to get away with it for a little while, but the fructose, the shit tons of sugar that you're going to be getting in, it's a shame, man, because people are just, they haven't got a foundational knowledge of nutrition, of biochemistry, of physiology, and how things actually interact with the body and how they interact with the body in a seasonal approach. And that is what true spirituality is. True spirituality is not promoing your latest hemp protein with your crystal set next to it and you just got your dreads redreaded.
I agree,
that's not what spirituality is, man. Spirituality is, like you said, is what these tribes practice, which is living to natural law, living in accordance to natural cycles. And when you live in accordance to natural cycles, as above, so below, that's when you begin to connect on a cellular level to the universe, to the harmonic universal frequency and structure of God, or structure of the collective spirit as such.
That is beautifully said.
Thanks, man. I've had a lot of time to sort of fester in my hate for lack of nutritional and spiritual dogma, just like you've gone through that journey as well, man. It's a challenge that we're facing. It's ever more present in day-to-day life, and we got like the whole thing of veganary now, and I was in London. I was literally in London on Sunday, and I was walking through Shoreditch, which is quite a hip place.
Yeah.
It's a place where the kiddies like to go with their hemp, or with their hemp clothing, or their vegan shoes, non-leather shoes, and it's everywhere. Veganary. It's just like all the restaurants are veganary. Come in, get your plant-based food.
Yep. Right in our faces everywhere.
Yeah, right in our faces everywhere. And it's like, you've got the big corporations now. I was discussing this on the podcast I had last night, and it's you've got Bayern that's literally just purchased Monsanto in 2018. So now you've got this, one of the world's most evil pharmaceutical biotech companies that have teamed up with the devil themselves, Monsanto. And so now they've got pretty much like 99.9% of the world's seed supply.
Crazy.
And what are they going to be doing with it? What was their meaning of buying? What was the purpose of them buying Monsanto? So are they going to be doing, like, the seeds are already fucked. Now, what are they going to be injecting into it? Are they going to be, I mean, without going too conspiracy, unless people want it, are they going to be injecting some new disease into these seeds? Are they, like, what's going to be happening with it? You got glyphosate. Is glyphosate going to be altered? And then we're going to get enough. Shit. Yeah, it is, man. It's already bad enough. It's scary. Fucking criminal.
Yeah, it's scary because what you're saying could all actually be done like this. You know, if you think of something so horrendous, it's very possible that they're thinking of doing it or can do it.
Yeah. And I mean, you're always going to get the skeptics that are going to say, is it malicious intent or is it more so just monetary greed? Like, is it one or the other? And I think it can be both.
I think it's both.
I think.
And we can go into that as well.
Yeah. Really, man. Yeah. Let's jump into that, dude. What's your opinions on that, Dom?
I just find that what they've been doing is they've been bombarding us with test tube chemical results. And by doing so, they've manipulated everybody into thinking that it's all to do with the nutrients in food. And while doing so, they've actually distracted the mass populations from actually understanding how soil works and going from the soil upwards. So like you were saying, about the cows and them thinking that they fart meat and it goes into the air, not understanding how soil actually sequesters most of that. And then not talking about how all of these monocropping and glyphosate-rich farms are destroying like 3 inches of topsoil all the time, slowly becoming deserts. We look at countries that first prized monocropping in grains, such as the Egyptians. Most of their land has become desert. The Egyptian body became flabby and weak. Weak bones. They had to perform ritual animals with their priests in order to stay decent health. So all of these things that people need to understand before they even think about micronutrients and biochemistry is being kept away from us, you know, and we're being distracted away from learning basic things that happen in history and how the nature works. So people are eating all these fruits that are sprayed, and all of these sprays are going into our water. All of these sprays are sitting on the earth, killing the microbiota of the soil. And then to top that off, the machines used to harvest are killing thousands of animals that we're not eating, that aren't even in our food chain. We're just killing them just to collect. And it's just ridiculous. And then we can now get onto the subject of plant chemicals. So not only the man-made chemicals that Monsanto and others have developed to kill bugs, which if they kill bugs and rodents, why would you, as an animal, also ingest that? It's just ridiculous. And we're talking about like natural plant chemicals as well that most vegans have no idea about. They just see the test tube results of epidemiology and clinical trials where they isolate one or two compounds from one vegetable or fruit, and it's said to be a cancer killer or this and that. But because they've never studied or looked deep into the biochemical systems of the body, they don't understand how, one, those nutrients are barely absorbed, and second, what other parts of the body are being taxed in order to assimilate that nutrition. And that's what's really making people ill as well. So as you said, we get all of these autoimmune diseases once we started making one vegetable, which is the mustard plant, crossbreeding it to make it palatable into all of these cruciferous and modern vegetables we have now, which are just full of anti-nutrients that bind to actual nutrients we need in our body. So it's just a plot to slowly malnourish the human being till it's so passive and weak it can't stand up for its rights anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. It turns you into a soy boy. Yeah, man, it's true. And like you're saying with the anti-nutrients, it's like, yeah, like, okay, you got, when you're doing your hunting and you're gathering, when you're hunting animals, their defense mechanism is that they have big ass teeth and they're come at you. And you, if you're hunting like a predator, or if you're hunting more of a prey-based animal, then yeah, they're gonna be fast as fuck, and they're gonna be able to run away. That's their defense mechanism.
Exactly. Yeah.
But what have plants got? Plants are just there, stationary. They can't move, but they can communicate with each other.
Yeah.
And
they even send each other nutrients.
Yeah, they can send each other nutrients. They can. there's a lot of things that we do not understand about the plant kingdom. And yeah, they have defense mechanisms. They have anti-nutrients. They have oxalates. They have phytic acids. They have all these things that, like you said, they stop the assimilation of vital minerals within the body that we need in order to actually create a good foundation of health. And if you're eating is raw vegetables, then yeah, you might be getting that nutrient that you read about on Instagram that like you said, it was just hyper focalized on one nutrient and its capabilities to improve health. But what about all the other shit? What about the other 99.9% of the chemical makeup of what you're consuming? And it's true, man. Like you were saying, we're living in dangerous times, especially that's not even taken into account, like you said, all the shit that it's sprayed with the glyphosate. And that's beforehand, there was so much money that was invested within covering up the carcinogenic effects of glyphosate. But recently there was like that court case where that groundskeeper sued Monsanto and actually won.
Oh yeah, I read about that.
Yeah, so he won for the, because he developed cancer and he said it was due to his exposure to glyphosate with his time keeping the grounds of the school that he worked at. And yeah, he won. So there, it's been proven that it's not just correlation. There is a causation between these sort of real strong pesticides, herbicides, which, by the way, started off as fucking Agent Orange in the Vietnam War. And no one talks about that. Like, people love watching those videos of them spraying over Vietnam. And it's like, oh, man, that's so terrible. Like, what, crimes against humanity and all that shit.
It.
And now you're fucking eating it. They're jokes on you, fucker. It's, it's true, man. It's...
Yeah, it's just like, even with what you said as well, the seasons, and as I said, like, first of all, people don't understand how the soil works, which is absolute warfare down there with the parasites, fungus, bacteria, and the plants itself, which plants are also eaten. And then what you mentioned earlier, they don't understand that there's two body clocks. There's a body clock and there's a brain clock, which matches the rhythms of the planet's light and seasons. And if you're eating outside of that, you're never going to be optimum. And not to say that, you know, you can't have some of those vegetables and enjoy some of the taste. We have created them to have a certain taste that we actually enjoy. Not saying that all of them are terrible for you, especially if you're buying from a decent small farm that's organic or biodynamic. You can enjoy them. Not that you need them, but you can definitely enjoy them and not, you know, burn yourself too badly. But the way that people are consuming vast amounts of these products that take so much of a toll on the earth, and then transportation wise have to be constantly shipped and flown around the world, while you have a third world country, well, pretty much say slaves, because they're not very well paid, you know, in the burning sun, picking all of these vegetables and fruits that, if you compare to the natural world, never existed. You'd never find them in the wild. And have just an increase of sugar and crap just to make them tasty. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, like a lot of the fruits today, it's like you can see it if you search up like what a banana looks like now compared to what it looked like only like a few hundred years ago. The amount of it's everything that we consume is a hybrid fruit. It's very rare that you consume anything that still closely resembles its sort of ancestral version of the fruit itself. And yeah, it's everything has just been genetically modified for taste. And we I really love, there's a woman named Nora Gadgaudas, who's she's a great researcher, and she's got one of the best lines ever, is that we have an unnatural abundance of unnatural food like substances.
Exactly. I mean, that's why we point out that veganism is so anti-nature. They just prefer everything man-made, and have been almost confused into thinking that it's natural, this whole system of eating and growing food, which, you know, the agenda, if we link it back to that, you know, it's where it comes with the corporate greed, is that these things are easy to sell and quick to grow. So it constantly makes a lot of money. And if we can fool people into eating something that it's so small, I mean, it's so slow the malnourishment, especially if you're fully vegan. The malnourishment from, I've rehabbed over 200 vegans now, and all of them took about, some about 4 to 5 years, some as much as 10 to 15 years before they fully understood and recognized that their health symptoms and lack of power and strength are to do with nutrition and their rhythms.
Yeah. And what's the, I always see it that you're posting on your stories on Instagram of like like big vegan influencers who are slowly starting to drop like flies, and they're slowly starting to come out and be like, guys, I fucked up. I had to have some meat, and now they're born again. They're born again meat eaters.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, loads. I mean, 2018 was a great year for that. All of the influencers that had started around 2010 or just before were getting into about 8 years of veganism, and they'd build up all of their business and their fame and attention on social media just through veganism, you know, like meal prep this, how to do this and that, how to heal this and that. And then only to have to put in between their legs, and a lot of them, I can see it in their videos, extremely frightened of the reaction they're going to get from the cult. And yeah, I mean, we've had thousands. I mean, you go on YouTube and just type in ex-vegan story, thousands of videos are going to come up, and it's only going to continue to grow as these big influencers are either trying to have babies and can't, so they have to change, or did get pregnant but starting to have tremendous issues because the female partner's bone marrow started to starve and they can't really grow the baby properly. And we also see that a lot of them get really sick themselves, in terms of quite a few cancers, a few strokes, and just a shitload of autoimmune diseases that, funny enough, I've reversed with just meat alone.
Mm. So what's the, if someone's listening to this and they're an open-minded vegan and they haven't been triggered and sent out some like brash post on Instagram demonizing our talk, and they're actually listening to what we've got to say, like, what would be your sort of words to them to like reintroduce some animal-based products into their diet? Like, where do they start? Do they just go cold turkey and just flip the switch and be like, go from their quinoa salad to a fucking ribeye steak? Or is there ways that you would suggest people to sort of work into a carnivore-based diet, or even more like you were saying, like an ancestral sort of based approach?
Right. I mean, usually a lot of them, even if they don't feel it, they have quite a few stomach acid issues, bile production issues, and intestinal issues as a whole. So that's usually the first focus. It's slowly changing and altering their physical state before even working on their psychological state, because usually if you fix the physical, the mental starts to accompany the good physical changes. So generally speaking, because of the volume of fiber that they're intaking and phytates and oxalates, there's usually loosening of the intestinal walls, which is why most vegans and vegetarians develop some sort of intestinal autoimmune condition first. And then from that point on, as you probably know, the evolution of the stomach being 1.5 pH with strong bile production to break down fat, usually because they're eating a lot of foods with different sets of bacteria and the generally alkaline foods, they ruin their stomach pH. So therefore, when they go back to meat, they can't break it down as efficiently. So they end up lingering in a parasympathetic state for much longer when trying during the first few weeks. And this also is a problem because until their stomach pH is back to what it should be, their potential to kill pathogenic bacteria in their stomach is diminished as well. So it's normally I start them off with intestinal building blocks, and also I try and kill off all of the other bacteria that they've been using to ferment all of the unassimilable fiber that they've got in their colon, trying to clean that out. And it's also really, really important as well to start them off with low purine to medium purine fats that usually come from seafood, because their body will have a lot of inflammation. So I try and work low to medium purine fats that are more DHA heavy. So that's usually seafood. And my first start off is usually using mollusks and shellfish that have a very, very underdeveloped nervous system in comparison to plants and big mammals.
Yeah, and then the obviously, like you were saying, then the DHA is very important. It's that's one of those things that's often overlooked, and it can have some pretty pretty extravagant effects if you supplement or not supplement, but you like consume the right foods with the with the with a high quantity of it in, and it's yeah, it's something that I've that I'm a big advocate of. There is a fucking rise at the moment, man, of people shitting on polyunsaturated fats. There's like, it's starting to become a bit of a trend on Instagram of people hating on DHA, people hating on...
Yeah, the propaganda to get rid of it, to stop people from understanding.
Yeah, mad. I know. And what they're doing, it's like, but it's coming from people who are not dumb. They're not idiots. Like, they're very kind of switched on with nutrition, but all of a sudden they're just jumping on this bandwagon saying that consuming any form of polyunsaturated fat is dangerous because of the oxidation. And they're just, but what they're saying, they're just talking about, they talk about DHA as if they're talking about fucking sunflower oil or rapeseed oil.
Yeah, yeah, those very harmful pro-inflammatory oils that most vegans use instead of butter, which is ridiculous. But it's, I guess it's what suits their agenda and what's paying them, I guess, when they talk. Like, for example, guys like us, we'll be saying this and we'll be matching it with the current science and the experience, but we've always got a space in the back of our head to go, maybe there's something more to this. Mm-hmm. And those people just cut off and say, well, no, this is it and this is the only truth.
Yeah.
You know, but...
It's important to keep an open mind, and it's important to not kind of imprison yourself within a ideology or a dogmatic belief, and keep yourself locked into a. You make yourself ignorant, and exactly. When you're ignorant, that's not what a truth seeker is. A truth seeker searches for truth, and that you got to entertain both sides of the story, and that's why it's fun to talk to people with that don't necessarily have the same. That are more sort of regimented in their belief system, in that like I've been around the block. I know both sides of the coin. Like
exactly.
I can, if I wanted to, I could flip the switch and argue in the case of a vegan. I could pretend to be a vegan, a fake vegan, go to a rally, and I can shout at people and tell them all the harmful effects that this is doing and that's doing. But at the same time, I could also then just switch my shirt over and stand on the other side and give shit back. And I understand both sides of the story, and it's important that people do that. It's important that people actually understand what the other group are trying to say it's important, because when you understand both sides, you can be a, like you said, a logical, analytical human being and come to your own conclusion instead of just blindly following a trend or an authoritative figure within that sounds like they've got their shit together, which they may or may not have. So it's always important to do your own research, learn both sides. And normally once you've learned both sides, you need to have that ability to connect with your innate inner intelligence, and your inner intelligence will be able to guide you and tell you what way to go.
Yeah, critical thinking. I mean, that's why also, like, when I do my Instagram stories and my posts and stuff like that, I'm saying sciences, anecdotal experiences from a vast range of clients and myself, but I'm not just giving everything away. I don't want to just tell you that this is the way and this is how it's done. I want you to actually look into it yourself and just spark curiosity for your own critical thinking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's
very, very, very important.
You know, there's so many of these people there that are just trying to be the guru that everyone has to come to and ask for. And I think that's okay. But I think more the purpose of the people like us that have the opportunity to dedicate our passion and interest into one field of profession and really study it every day and work for it, we should just be the ones that are able to provide the relevant information and spark the curiosity.
Yeah, and what's important as well, man, is that you embody everything that you practice what you preach. Like, there's plenty of individuals out there that they've got a bit of fame and they're telling people to do this and that, but are they really embodying it? Whereas I know that you, and I know that myself, we are living textbooks.
I mean, I'm not gonna be doing something else in the shadows. I'm doing exactly the same protocols. programming that I would do for anybody else, you know, because I have the confidence now with it. But what my mentor, Paul Cech, always said is, if you don't wear it, don't share it.
Yes. Oh, man, I'm glad that you said that, because I heard him say that on a podcast the other day. And I went to repeat it, to paraphrase it to someone, and it just fucking went out of my mind. And I was like, if you don't wear it, you don't. And I was like, oh, fuck, I forgot how that ends. And I was just like, anyway, I had to swerve that subject. But yeah, that's the one, man. If you don't wear it, don't share it. That's great. Yeah, that's literally what it's. That's a great rule set to live by. And another one that he says is that it's kind of a little bit of a tangent in this, but mean what you say and say what you mean. Exactly. And there's plenty of people that don't really live on that frequency, which is good. So anyway, Dom, I want to kind of like take a little bit of a tangent on this, on the conversation, and bring up something that I think it'd be beneficial for loads of people, because it's not something that's normally talked about in the health and fitness industry, in the biohacking industry, or just whatever we're sort of playing grounds we're operating within. But I know that you're a trusted source, because I've seen it. I've seen you do it. And that is how to recover properly, recover from injury, and to do it in the most natural way that you can and the most beneficial way. And I've watched your journey from when you tore your bicep to really where you're at now in a reasonable amount of time. You're back doing fucking front levers and doing all types of the crazy shit that you get up to. Like, if everyone's listening to this for the first time and they don't know Dom, check out his Instagram and check out like what this guy's capable of. This guy isn't just some beta that's like sat there eating meat every day. This guy's a fucking beast. Like, you need to see what he's capable of, man. And it's gonna totally make you be like, wow, man, I want to be like that. I want to be able to do like a one arm lever. If no one knows what that is, you want to search it up. I want to be able to do a backflip and all the cool shit that you can do, man. Your dragon, is it? It's called dragon squats, right?
Yeah,
that single leg one we crossed over.
Yeah.
Yeah, your dragon squats and that. Yeah, man. Just so you're an example of someone who's in peak physical conditioning, and from time to time, you are gonna pick up an injury here and there when you're doing alpha shit. So what was your protocol? Actually, if you could give someone like a little, if you could give people just a breakdown of what happened to you, and then lead on into like your whole recovery protocols that you implemented and the results you've seen, I think that would be a good place to go from here, man.
Cool, sounds good. So first, appreciate those kind words. As a calisthenics coach, I'm always trying to push the boundaries on physical strength, and I've always agreed with the Greeks, you know, it is a shame for a man, and I would put in now, and woman, to go through life without knowing their full physical strength and capabilities and mental focus. So
yeah, man, it's a Socrates quote.
Yeah, so that's why me and my partner, we train damn hard. We are completely obsessed with figuring out our full potential, just as you are with your trainer as well. I see the madness you do with the heavy kettlebells and stuff, and proper raw movements that you do as well, which is, I need to get more into that. But I was at a calisthenics tournament called Battle of the Bars, where I was just doing a little run on the bars, and I broke both my wrists. So I was rushed into hospital. A few hours after that, I had severe operation on my left wrist, which removed a few bones and decompressed my carpal tunnel, and then the other one broke clean. And that was during my ketosis days, and I used ancestral protocols that I still use to this day, and ketosis, to recover severely smashed wrists in 6 months and regain all of my body weight back in a total of a year. So another 6 months to recover all strength, which was extremely quick. And from doing so, it gave me a lot of trust and confidence in utilizing, updating, and using these time and time again for any other injury. So a month ago, I tore my bicep distal tendon, and that was due to I was overtraining. That's one downfall, actually. You asked me what a downfall to carnivore was, and one downfall is that you have so much energy and such quick recovery that sometimes you can ignore the fatigue in your connective tissue. And that's when shit can happen if you're not very disciplined. And I was disciplined. I was training iron cross, front lever, Olympic lifting, and planche all at the same time, which are all extreme amount of stress on the bicep ligaments and tendons. But my mistake was the following few hours after my Olympic lifting session, I had to teach a class, and I was teaching planche in that class. And I wasn't warmed up. It was very cold already. And two of my students begged me to demonstrate a prone arrow to them. And I really didn't want to, but I made that foolish coach mistake where I went to just show them a quick one. I bit all my weight onto my elbow as it locked straight, and it just popped. The sound was just disgusting. The whole room heard it. So it was a type 2 tear. I was literally a few millimeters off of a full tear off the bone. So I was quite lucky I didn't need surgery. They gave me, after the scan, they gave me, I think it was 8 weeks recovery time and another 6 to 8 weeks before I could do anything physical, like strenuous with the arm, so weightlifting or calisthenics. And the protocols I used, all ancestral based and carnivore based, because I was already a year into carnivore by this point, I managed to recover and be completely pain-free within 2 weeks. And 2.5 weeks, 3 weeks, I was already lifting weights and training some of the bodyweight movements again. Now it's been nearly 2 months, and I'm already training all of my strength moves again. So it was extremely quick, blew all my expectations.
That's amazing, man. It's and that's what I mean. That totally goes against anything that you would hear in the most sort of up-to-date sports science rehabilitation literature. If you were going to a unit like a PubMed or any of the sort of major journals databases, you wouldn't find that. The data would say that's almost an impossibility, and it just shows you that how far behind science can be.
Yeah.
And if all you're doing is just following the latest science, then you're only getting like a small percentage of what reality really is and what's really possible. Cause it's going to be rare to find a case like yours being replicated on a scientific basis.
Yeah.
Or using those scientific protocols, unless the people that were studying knew their shit and actually tried to study that form of recovery, because most of the time they're just going to be following like textbook style recovery,
yeah.
rest, ice, compression, raise, all of that old school shit. That's it's not the same as what you've been doing, man. And I was totally impressed, dude. Like I said, I followed you from when you first got that injury to where you are now, and it's like, shit, Dom's recovered fucking quick.
Yeah,
and
it's been surprising.
And the main thing is that it's not just recovery. It's the fact that it's not like you've just recovered and now you've got some movement back. It's like you're on your way to almost getting all of that strength back. Like you're doing your strength training again. And it's, yeah, like you said, man, it was only like 2 months ago. And if you were on a vegan diet, shit, you'd probably still be in an arm cast and probably have limited flexion at the arm at this time. If you were following the standardized protocols, yep, that you're sort of given from the doctors or your sort of run of the mill physiotherapist. Yeah, I loved it, man. So, like, what sort of did you? So, you didn't change anything at all. You're still eating the same carnivore diet. You're still,
Well, yeah. I mean, I changed a few things. I do change things from when I'm injured. Before I tell you that, it's, the point you were saying about with how the vegans take longer. I've had so many friends and so many clients that were vegan before, and they said the same thing. It was years and years going on with an injury, and then the hospitals are just going to put them through surgery. And then so many of these people that were going to have surgery within a few months, I got to them before and applied the same protocols, and none of them ended up going for the surgery. They've even recovered fully, or I've got so much more movement back. So yeah, the proof is in the pudding there, even if it's anecdotal in that sense, because that it's just happening no matter what gender, race, geographic circumstance, people are healing the same. But to go into that a bit more, so what I focus on when I have an injury, and I mean, I say this, like, I have a recovery PDF, and in that I say, this is going to slap in the face and ignore all of the doctor's advice. So please be aware of this if you're working with a doctor. I have to say that straight up, because it's all ancestral based without technology. Because if you think how our tougher ancestors would have dealt with an injury right there and then from hunting or exploring, they didn't have ice machines or all of the painkillers and stuff we have now. And so, I mean, the main thing I work on, and this is the main part of recovery, is the angiogenic balance of the body. Once you control angiogenesis and anti-angiogenesis, you have full control of the inflammation in your body and the hormonal balance. And along with that, the primary key is to raise cholesterol as high as possible in the body to create more intracellular activity that's going to remove the waste products of the mitochondria that are working on the energy production and the healing of the body, and also delivering the building blocks, which for me is just purely meat. But during a recovery protocol, I increase the amount of fish, shellfish, fish roe, bone marrow, and deer antler that I take. So all of these things are the key building blocks of the connective tissue, the bone marrow, which then in turn raises your immune system to start fixing the body.
Yeah, like the bone marrow is a good one, man. I love getting in some bone marrow. Within the bone marrow itself, you've got the glycosaminoglycans, which are going to be those building block molecules that you were referring to.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, man. There's so much that can be done. And just on top of this, it's kind of like, again, a little tangent. I've seen that you've been hooked up by my friends Brian and James from Red Light Rising.
Oh yeah, I'm sitting in front of their light right now as we speak.
Really?
Yeah, I'm all red, man. And shit and glowing about.
Yeah, that's another one that's gonna that aids in recovery, like having that red light to really sort of nourish your mitochondria, to charge up the cells. Like you said, there's a lot of little tweaks here and there. The ancestral plan is good, great, and there are some cool little biohacks that you can do now. I mean, again, you could do like cold thermogenesis. That's gonna help.
Yeah.
The red light, that's gonna help. There's a few cool things, but yeah, how are you getting on with that red light, man? Because I know James and Brian well, and they're sound fellas, and they're really flying the flag in the UK for the whole sort of red light movement. And it'd be just interested to know how you're getting on with it.
Yeah, as you said, the biohacking now is kind of what I've been studying. Apart from, I study veganism every day, which is quite surprising to most people. I also been studying a lot more biohacking and quantum biology and quantum physics. So I'm starting to incorporate that more rather than, you know, because we have the technology now, we might as well use it if it has great effect. And reading the rhythms of red light, near infrared, and ultraviolet, and how they work at different times of the day for different things had me really interested. And as you said, Brian, the guys from Red Light Rising, they're superb guys. I love everything they say. I love what they're working towards. I like all their biohacking meetups they do in London. And
yeah, I was at one on Sunday. That's where I was.
Ah, cool. I need to get myself to one. I'd love to do a talk at one as well.
Trust, brother. Yes. We'll talk about this afterwards once we stop, but I'll run you in on the details, and I know all the organizers, and I'm in with that team, so I can sort out. But yeah, we'll continue with that in once we've stopped recording. But yeah, man, continue with what you were going on.
So I've been using the red light because the bicep tendon still has water surrounding the tendon for protection. So not painful or stopping any mobility, but just you can sometimes have a bit of water surrounding the tendon out of inflammation just to protect it. And so I'm using the red light to break down some of the tissue and the collagens around there. And I'm going to test it over the next 4 weeks to see if there's a reduction in size. And also on my scars, my surgery scars and things like that, just testing it out and see how I get on with it. I mean, I understand the science. And I mean, I also got some some Rhythm Optics. So I'm wearing like blue blocking glasses.
Yeah, man. Good show.
I'm wearing those and I'm using the red light morning and night. So right now I've just done half an hour of red light. And it's funny because I can already feel within about 2 to 3 minutes into the red light therapy, I can feel this like movement around in the cells wherever it's targeted at, which is quite bizarre. It's almost like a creepy feeling. You feel like a little vibration, a little movement, as if the mitochondria are just working a little bit faster and a little bit better.
Yeah, and like literally, man, this is like you're saying, you're starting to get into like the more of the quantum realm in terms of like our health and our biology. And that's really what our body is kind of powered off. It's powered off photons and electrons.
Well, yeah, so photons, creatures of light.
Yeah, light particles and yeah, creatures of light, man, and electrons, that sort of negative ionic discharge from or exchange from the earth through grounding. all of this is what powers the cells and what we need. This is why polyunsaturated fats are very important when taken correctly and in an unoxidated form, is that omega-3s and omega-6s, they have the capability in that they store and group electron clouds outside of the cell. And what you need is that you need your cellular nucleus to have a strong positive charge. You need the inner cellular membrane to have a negative charge and the outside of the cell membrane to have a strong positive charge. So what this does is it creates like a diode in that it pulls the photons and electrons that cloud outside of the cellular membrane in towards the cell.
Yeah, it's like an osmosis process.
Yeah, and then that's going to be how you charge your cells up. And that is a quantum, or like, yeah, that's a quantum explanation of how we really kind of need what we need to create energy. And like you were saying, the red light, what are you getting? You're getting photons, you're getting light in a certain bandwidth that's going to help really sort of optimize your cellular health, your mitochondrial health. And a lot of the shit that we find nowadays that people have issues with, really kind of the root cause is almost a mitochondrial deficiency.
Oh, it's generally just that alone.
Yeah. And it's, and there's a lot of things that when we look to nowadays that are quote-unquote biohacks, they're kind of like pretty much a technological version of a natural day-to-day thing that would have happened in our life back then.
Natural
protocol. Like you go out, you get the sun. So what's the sun? The sun, you're getting photons from the sun into your system. You need, obviously there are things that you need in order to enhance the effect of the sun on you, such as DHA, such as melanin. There's a lot of these sort of compounds that you would need to really proliferate that that sort of solar effect. And then you've got the earth as well. So you've got, if you're grounding, we wouldn't have had shoes with rubber on the bottom to insulate the that act as an insulator and stop that electromagnetic connection with the earth.
Yeah.
Those electrons are vital, man. Being near the sea, being near the ocean, the negative ionic discharge from being near the ocean or being near a waterfall or a live stream.
Yeah.
We need to make sure that the water that we drink is not contaminated with fucking birth pills,
drugs and fluoride,
and pharmaceutical drugs, fluoride, chlorine, all of that shit. That simply the sun, the earth, and the water are like the holy trinity, and our body, our biological temple, our bioelectrical temple that our consciousness is plugged into, is the medium between those three. And it's when we really begin to connect, like you said, what true spirituality is, which is living in accordance to nature, connected to nature, connected to the sun, connected to the earth.
Yeah, good intuition, focused mind.
Yeah, exactly, man. And you begin to resonate on a much more natural harmonic level with the earth, as above, so below. And that is when you start to connect to that universal consciousness and you start to experience a heightened sense of reality, a heightened sense of consciousness.
Exactly.
And yeah, it's so important. And I'm glad that that's something that you're now sort of delving into, as it is something that's, it's going to really help with securing some more foundational shit for you in terms of like stuff that you can pass to your clients, stuff that you can start to post about and really inform people about, because you have a solid voice within this, within the industry, within your audience. And if you start to push this stuff on them, I think it's going to be good for them to go and experiment with themselves, because it's because it's so simplistic in nature, people kind of discredit it and downplay it, like it won't have an effect. Yeah. Like, oh, you just go out in the sun, do you? Oh, that's not going to help. I need to eat my soy protein to recover. And it's, it's such simple things like that can have such profound effects. And it's really important. And even with today, like, okay, the UK, we are in a bit of a shit position in that we are limited with sun exposure. It's extremely hard. I don't know why, to get clean water, to go to local springs. A lot of them have been contaminated. Their total dissolved solids percentage is way higher than it needs to be. So even like our natural springs are kind of fucked up. So it is hard to get proper water.
Getting more difficult,
yeah, for sure, man. And it's out of interest, dude, have you got any protocols when it comes to the water you drink, the fluid intake you have? Have you got any views and opinions on that?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, as you were saying before, everything you mentioned about the water and how we deal with our atmosphere and the sunlight, it's all pretty much the holistic protocols that I'm pushing onto people first and try and get them to adapt before they even focus onto the food itself. But when it comes to water, here down in Brighton, we have a few local springs which are really nice. One's called Pear Tree Well, very high content mineral water, not polluted whatsoever. But I mean, most of the time, the best thing to do is, if you can only afford like a little filter for your tap water, is to try and get one that gets most of the chlorine out. Depending where you are, you might have to get one that also filters out most of the fluoride as well, especially like during the States. And what I do is, any system you use, whether just a tap filter or a whole reverse osmosis filter, is to remineralize the water. So I always add plain, high quality sea salt from local shores. I add a little bit to the water, and I always keep my water in glass, and I allow it to sit in sunlight to restructure the water back to what it would have been if it was just flowing down a river.
Nice, man. You need to get some Miron glass. Miron glass is gonna sort of convert the that sort of ultraviolet. You're gonna get the violet spectrum of the light, which is gonna that really helps in terms of restructuring the water.
I've got like a little one.
Yeah, Miron glass, dude. Check it out. It's and you put it out in the sun, and yeah, it will just fucking supercharge that water.
Yeah, you might
send
me that link.
Yeah, there's that, and I've got a little filter from a brand, an American brand called Natural Dynamics. And it's like you pour it through and it restructures the water. So it recreates the vortex movement of when water is like crashing into itself. Yeah. I'm like a little bit dubious. I'm like, does this work? But it's weird. It makes the water feel denser. It's hard to explain. It feels like wetter and denser.
I know what you mean.
Yeah, and it's interesting though, because that's ideally what you want to do. You're saying that with the reverse osmosis filter, you can get that, or if you want to get a water distiller and like totally neutralize everything within the water, so it's just, and then you start to build it up from scratch. So yeah, remineralize it, add a little bit of local sea salt to it, or you can add like a little bit of shilajit to get that sort of fulvic humic acid in there as well with all the minerals. There's a few things that you can do, but it is important to really keep track of the water that's going into your body, because your body is mostly made up of water. And if you're consuming shitty water that's dead, that's stagnant, and it's got like water holds energy, like not holds energy, sorry, holds memory.
Yeah.
And if you're drinking water that's got, well, fluoride in, chlorine,
yeah,
but even going
pills,
deeper than
that.
Birth control pills and all of that shit, that's a memory, that's an energetic imprint that's in the water you're drinking. Yeah. And that energetic imprint is going to imprint your energetic field.
Well, it's funny you say that. Sorry, it's funny. Just wanted to make a point. Is that, you know, most people talk about hormone-fed meat and how it affects the body. And we've just seen through a trial that you have to eat about 27 hormone-fed steaks in order to get a trace amount that could build up over a few days to a few weeks. But just drinking 3 to 4 glasses of tap water does it. That's how bad that is for you.
Crazy, right, man? And it's you can, if what I would suggest is that you can go onto your local water provider's website where they have to give a breakdown of what's in the water, and you can have a look at the parts per million. You can look at the total dissolved solid. You can see how much fluoride's in there. You can have a look at how much chlorine's in there. Like, I go on Bristol Water, obviously being in Bristol, and I can check the content of the tap water. And we actually, in Bristol, we're kind of lucky that we don't have much, we don't really have any added fluoride. So that's handy. I don't know what it's definitely going to have some in London. They need to keep,
I'm not sure. I think they made it illegal here a while ago.
Good. Well, maybe there is
most of Europe, I think, made fluoride illegal. I think it's just the States that's still very persistent with it.
Yeah, they're in their own little world over there, man. But at the same time, as well as that's happening to them over there, they are also a lot more progressive and a lot more interested in ways to combat it. Like, if you walk into your normal run-of-the-mill generic public on the street and you start talking about fluoride, they're going to be pretty clueless about it. They're not going to understand it. Whereas in America, it is a little bit more of a hot topic, and people can't do kind of go out of their way to not drink the tap water. Like, they know it's bad over there.
But they also support it as well, a lot of them, which is, you know...
Yeah. Who's that vegan doctor that you kind of take the piss out of all the time?
The frailty known as McGregor. Dr. Greger,
yeah, and he's coming out with all his bullshit propaganda, pushing the vegan agenda and saying that fluoride is perfectly safe.
And his teeth are rotting and they look terrible. I don't know what he's on about, but
But it's the same. It's horrible, man, because it's the same thing with like a lot of dentists. Like, a lot of dentists are always going to be pushing on special toothpaste that's just full of fucking sodium fluoride, and you're like, do you not do any reading? Like, you're meant to be a smart person. You are a dentist. You would have had to go through the basics of medical school, and then you began to specialize. Do you not understand the basics that fluoride is fucking bad for you and will, like, literally destroy you from the inside out? And they're just like, no, it's perfectly safe. Take this toothpaste. It's good for your teeth.
This is fucking stupid. I mean, most of these doctors and dentists and even nutritionists, the problem is that all these courses aren't really updated. They're just churning in people and making money. So they teach all of these things. Yeah. And unless you dedicate time outside of your professional practice to study, you're not going to learn anything more, which is why most doctors don't ever progress. They just sit in the office, prescribe, and don't actually fully utilize all the resources they have to learn.
Yeah, it's easy to get complacent when you're bringing in bank.
Yep.
When you're overworked, when you've got
stress, and you just have patient after patient. You get home, the last thing you want to do is read about your work. You know, you just want to switch off in front of the TV.
Yeah, man. Watch some Netflix, maybe watch some porn, and then call it a night. but it's interesting, man. Like you said, even with like these nutrition courses that are out there today, I mean, they sit there and they're learning some nutrition, but they're going to come out with it, and the first thing they're probably going to advise to any of their clients is make sure you eat that chicken breast and rice 6 times a day.
Yeah,
get those 6 meals in.
I mean, those
keep that metabolism going. Keep it lit.
It's so. I mean, those courses are absolutely most of them anyway. I mean, if you look at it, nothing that I use now that has been successful and matches ancestral and current science, I didn't learn any of it in my course, any of those courses.
You were very fortunate, though, man, that you were with Paul, that you studied under Paul, because he's...
I mean, most of what I do disagrees with what he says now as well, which is why, yeah.
Really?
I mean, a lot of the holistic protocols I learned and the start-off from it was great, and I still use a lot of the protocols. But most of the science I apply and the techniques I apply are all from spending time with ancestral people and studying ancestral people and having the luck within the first 2 years before I even made Origins of Vitality to have people that trusted in me working on them, knowing that I wasn't going to make them worse, just possibly better or the same. So, yeah, most of what I learn in courses, I don't really apply right now. it's all from more experience and self-study after being licensed to practice. And that's why you see, like, mm-hmm. so many people will do, like, a bullshit course, like a holistic nutrition course. And as soon as they pass, they write holistic coach, vegan. But that course never taught them anything about veganism. You know, holistics doesn't even mean veganism, but they just do the course and then just teach what they want to teach anyway, mm-hmm. which is even yeah. more dangerous in a sense, you know?
Yeah, there's plenty of false prophets out there. There's plenty of people that we were discussing earlier, that if they don't wear it, so don't share it. And it's they know where the market's at. They know where the market's going, where it's geared towards, and people are jumping on board with it.
Yeah.
It is it is quite like infuriating to see, especially when we are both practicing very similar things, me and you, and it's like you can just see where the direction's going, where it's being pushed. And that's not just in nutrition either. It's in exercise. Yeah, it's the same sort of thing. You see, like, all the people that have got, like, literally millions of followers, and they're just fuckboys that just do just bullshit exercise, and they sell a carbon copy exercise plan, or if you want to kind of flip the sex, and they're going to be selling their carbon copy booty builder plan.
That's a template.
That's just just literally a template. It's just a template that they probably got off bodybuilding.com.
No analysis, no nothing, no taking into account certain life circumstances and unique schedules, nothing. Just bullshit run-of-the-mill advice you can find on Google if you search for 2 minutes.
Yeah, literally, man. It's funny. It's funny to see. Obviously, we've spent like a long time talking about like nutrition and things like that. But what's your sort of opinion on training? If people were to be like, right, okay, let's just imagine hypothetically we've got a blank slate, and you're like, right, this is what I'm going to teach you to build a foundation of strength, power, mobility, all of that sort of shit. What would you go ahead and tell people to integrate into their own programs?
I mean, for me, it's the same as nutrition. Like, I get loads of questions on training and nutrition all the time, and they're like, oh, I have this, I have that, I need this, I need that. And I just have to tell them straight up, as much as it hurts not being able to just help everyone, I just say that I can't just advise where you should start from without knowing your body. So I always have to analyze the person's body, their past stresses, current stresses, past relationship to food, current relationship to food and exercise. And that's the only way for me to really be confident enough to tell somebody where they should start. But for right now, I would say everybody should focus on end range movements. Before you start putting a shitload of weight on your back, on your arms, or trying to build muscle, work on every single joint being as controlled, strong, and as mobile as physically possible for yourself and your body makeup, you know, your genetics, you know, your bone length, your muscle mass, things like that. So that's what I've been focusing a lot, especially during injury, is doing more FRC patterns.
Mm-hmm. And what would, for people that don't know what, like an example of that, what would you say, would just to give like a brief example of what doing, like training the end range of movement would be?
So like basically you have the standard and the norm that you see is either people are lifting heavy weights, trying to build muscle, or they're passively stretching, doing yoga, trying to lengthen the muscles. Both create a whole host of imbalances. So functional end range conditioning is pretty much training flexibility the same way you would train hypertrophy, depending if there's any posh people mm-hmm. out there. Hypertrophy. So it's it's pretty much building muscle, but by testing the full range and creating more range in the joint. So, like, for example, say you want to get a forward bend where you can get your face to your knees and your arms past your toes. Instead of just passively trying to sink lower and lower, you would work the compression of your thighs, your hip flexors and your lower abs to try and squeeze and engage the legs to strengthen while pulling your lower back and lengthening it into position rather than just passively dropping into it. So you're creating a neuromuscular efficiency which directs more nerves into the muscle, which help it trigger, help it fire into position. So the more of that, the more neuromuscular efficiency you have in your body, which is what calisthenics is based around, the more nerve connection you have into the muscle. It doesn't necessarily make the muscle bigger, although you will get some growth, but it more activates the muscle. And the more activation you have in the muscle, the more force production you can get out of the muscle, safely anyway, without damaging the joints.
Yeah, man, that was a good breakdown. I think that is something that is very beneficial for people to look into and search up. If, again, like you said, if people are interested and they want to search it up, you can literally just search up FRC and have a little look. Just hashtag FRC and you'll find plenty of videos on Instagram, on YouTube, where you can see people doing these sort of exercises, and it's impressive, man. Another one, if you really want to go deep on it and you want to go straight into the deep end, search up a guy called Hunter Fitness.
Yeah, Hunter's a great example.
Yeah, he's, and you can see what the human body is capable of when taken to the extreme with those measures, because he's on another level to a lot of people.
Well, I mean,
like the Yeah, I was going to say the dexterity he has in his legs and like the shoulder mobility he has, and yeah, he's pretty insane.
Yeah, I mean, have you heard about Hilderson Yohin?
Yeah, that's the one that you keep posting up, right? When he's doing those squats on the front on the front of his feet. Is that the one?
So he's a great example. I met him in Bali at a retreat that I was doing the nutrition bit of. He was doing the FRC bit. That's where I first learned about it. And I did some coaching under him. I mean, we did a swap. So he had a autoimmune condition of his bowel. And I reversed that. And in return, he opened up and changed my style of training for my hips and pretty much my whole body. That's when he started seeing the dragon squats, the sissies, all of that kind of stuff coming on. That was due to him. And he started as a bodybuilder, just like myself. Got really big, really stiff, and just show muscle, no strength behind it. Gave it all up, and for 2 years he's just trained FRC and body flex, and I suggest everyone check him out because you'll be inspired to begin that kind of training as well. When you see the amount of strength in every joint with extreme flexibility and no injuries, I mean, you see, well, I have a lot of friends that do yoga and they all end up tearing their hamstrings or get lower back issues, and they get all kinds of issues from over lengthening the body, creating passive flaccidity rather than strength, and that he's doing more flexibility than them with weight added and just so brutally strong.
Yeah, for sure, man. And it's so it's definitely something that I've started to implement as well into my own regime. And yeah, and you need it just to loosen up. You need to have that joint awareness. You need to it really is a game changer, man.
Yeah, I mean,
it really is.
I see it with your training.
And it transfers so well.
Yes, I see it with your training. You know, the I forgot what you call it, the pole with the heavy weight ball at the end and the hammer.
Yeah. All of that, man. It's so beneficial.
But that's kind of along the lines of end range strength, you know, because you're controlling your weight in so many different planes of motions that you're just creating so much flexibility and strength. And that's what, I guess, stops you from being injured. You know, if you ever fall or you're being attacked and your body is in a position that's a stress on the joint, you're going to have the stability to bounce right back from it rather than snapping something.
Yeah, and it's important just to be able to have quite a broad spectrum of training protocols under your belt. Because otherwise, if you just, like with anything, man, it's the same with a diet. If you kind of just align yourself to one specific protocol and you can't get stuck within it, then you're only going to benefit the benefits of it and you're only going to experience the adverse effects of it. Whereas if you kind of use a combination within like training protocols, then you can reap the benefits of multiple training styles, and those benefits will begin to mitigate the adverse effects that would be associated with the on an individual basis of each of those protocols. So I try to really mix it up and do everything throughout the week. I do a little bit of functional training, a little bit of calisthenics, weighted calisthenics, a little bit of powerlifting, a little bit of like movement. I'm quite liking ecstatic dance at the moment, which is one of those that's it's a little bit far out there and a little bit hippie, too hippie for most, but it's good just to, it brings good body awareness. And if you've got a beat to follow and you allow it to kind of flip. Yeah. It's really good, man. It's good for the soul, man.
Yeah, well, I'll be training you at some point.
Yeah, for sure, Dom. We definitely need to. And just to sort of tie things in, because we are close to that 90-minute mark, the way that I always sort of end these things is by asking the guest to give, apart from what we've been talking about, I mean, if you really wanted to, you can kind of go over it again. If you could say one thing to add into your life, so for the listeners that are still with us, that's either physical, mental, or spiritual practice, what would you do it? What would you do and why? What would give the most bang for your buck?
All right. I mean, so I've got a separate thing for each of those. But when it comes to the nutrition, do not be afraid of red meat and its consumption. It's not the cow, it's the how. It's not the red meat, it's what's alongside the red meat.
So nice.
That's what I say. Don't be scared by all of the propaganda out there. There's many of us that have been carnivore for many years. 10, 20 years plus, and it doesn't seem to be slowing down or any changes. It just seems to get better. You know, approaching 30 now, and I feel stronger and younger than when I was 20. So that's what I have to say on that. Mm-hmm. Mentally speaking, spiritually speaking, don't second guess yourself. Find what it is that you need to do and make it your life purpose and stick with it if you really enjoy it and love it. It will have the results you want, even if it takes 1 year, 5 years or 10 years, you must stick to what your heart and mind should focus on together, as that is nutrition for me.
Yeah, man, I love that. That's fucking good advice. That's find your purpose, man. That's I fucking love that. Good going, man. That was a good shout with that one.
Yeah, just too many people try and escape their condition and their life, you know, rather than try and escape it, sharpen up, eat well, do the protocols, move your body, and you're going to have the clearest mind in order to go after what it is your purpose is designed to be, either by yourself or by what you were born into. Doesn't make a difference. You just have to love it and stick with it to get the results.
Yeah, for sure, man. That's why we do this shit. That's why we go out of our way to be physically primed, to be mentally primed, to be spiritually primed. It's in order to equip you with the tools you need to fulfill your destiny, to fulfill your purpose of self-actualization, which you're going to get through following your bliss, through following your passion. And if you're not doing that, then you can biohack all the shit you want. You can eat all the health, organic biodynamic food you want. But if you're not doing something that your heart is fully involved in and invested in, then you're wasting your fucking time, because what's the point? You need to be able to experience life and experience. It's like, have all the knowledge you want, but it's the experience which is going to transmute that knowledge into wisdom. And that wisdom is what's going to get you to the next level of life and for you to really be the optimal and ultimate version of yourself. So yeah, that was really important for you to say that, Dom. It's no one said that on here before, but that's spot on. Follow your bliss.
Glad it's appreciated. I hope that take into account as well. I mean, just to add one thing to that as well, it's there's always going to be many people against you that don't believe in what you do, but don't let that deter you. I get hate messages from vegans on a daily basis, and I get hate messages from the fitness industry guys as well, because I attack them a lot. It's not just veganism, there's many things at play with the agendas and corporate greed, and I get hate from them on a daily basis, but I respond with logic and compassion, and I always see them come back 4-6 months later, sometimes a year, thanking me for pursuing what I'm doing, thanking me for putting out the knowledge, staying true to it, showing the results in myself and clients, and it gets them to grow and change. It seems to open their mind without you having to bombard them with what you think. You just let them see the results and the truth you walk in, and by that, we can help each other grow.
Yeah, for sure, man. So let's tie things up here. So for everyone that's been listening, where can everyone find you, Dom? Like, where's the best sources of to contact you? Where are you most available? If you just drop out your information, that'd be great.
Cool. Well, my main use is Instagram because it's just so easy to put out information and talk. So it's origins.nutrition on Instagram. That's where you will find me doing daily stories of all concepts of nutrition and biology, biochemistry, and quantum physics. And the other place you can reach me if you want to have a deeper look into what I do is my website, which is www.originsofvitality.com.
Cool. I'll add all of that into the show notes as well for everyone to pick up on. And yeah, thanks for coming on, Dom. I mean, it's been a fucking blast, as I knew it was going to be, hence the reason why we tried so hard to make this happen, because I know that me and you can just vibe hard and really, we really connect, and we know we're both on a similar path. So same sort of similar message that we're putting out there, putting in the work. And yeah, it's been great having you on, and hopefully everyone that's been listening is really enjoyed it as well, learned a few things. Maybe we've converted a few militant vegans out there, maybe not. Maybe we're gonna have some pitchforks out with some torches outside our houses when this airs, but who knows. It's been a blast, dude, and we're finally call this one a night. And what are we on, 90 minutes? So yeah, it's a good showing. So guys, hopefully you've really enjoyed this. Dom, thanks for coming on. Let's call this a quits for episode 18 of the Red Pill Initiation Hour. Guys, stay woke as fuck. And as always, let's shine the light together. Save yourself, save the world. Let's roll out.